Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, delighted and thrilled and excited to be your host again today. And you know, we have a goal in mind as we start the first show of this new year. Once again, it's the goal we've had for the last 5 years of doing this, but we're taking it to another level. I daily pray, Lord, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, yes. And double, triple, and quadruple, yes, we're going for it big time. And we just want to thank you for tuning in. Thank you for participating in this wonderful experience we have on the planet today. I also want to pause and say a big thank you to our sponsor, the Comfort Technology. Yes, go to advancedliving.com or click on BBS. There's links to take you there so that you can check out the Comfort Technology used by celebrities and doctors and lots of folks to instantly lower their stress and help them sleep better and have more energy. So check out advancedliving.com. All right, here we go. How many of us have said, oh my gosh, we're in a place and we just want to have something better? The family that we were born into, our neighborhood, different things we see. If you tune into a TV show in national TV, most of the evening shows, they show you one nasty interaction after another. They make it look entertaining, but all they're showing is garbage of people hurting each other and not getting along and having terrible experiences. And frankly, you know, we learn to walk and so many things by watching others. And here's hundreds of millions of people watching this kind of entertainment, if you'd want to call it. To me, it's more of a punishment because it inflicts on people some terrible morals and terrible values and terrible impression of the planet. Well, how about if we start off with a little different theme for the year 2011, huh? Yeah. I mean, what if there were some really elegant places on the planet where people were into art and beauty and love and culture and had figured out some wonderful ways to get along with each other? You think, what, am I smoking something again? Well, no. Now, I do take drugs, but I only take drugs that are generated internally. So if you want to take the best, you got to get them for free. And that's from Dr. M.Y. Self. And you got an M.Y. Self doctor for you. But what are we talking about? Well, we have got a guest, Keith Boucher, and you might not have heard of him yet, but you're going to be hearing a lot more about him. He did a movie, Dreams of Damenhur, and yes, he's going to tell us about a community that's over in Italy and they are doing some amazing, fantastic things. And this gentleman, who's up in the Washington area, Washington State area, is a world-class filmmaker that has gone out and documented this with a film called Dreams of Damanhur. And yes, Damanhur, D-A-M-A-N-H-U-R. You're going to want to learn about this, and Keith is here to tell us all about this. So welcome aboard, Keith.
Thank you, Ken. Glad to be here.
Oh, well.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
That's right. Happy New Year to you and to all of our wonderful listeners. Now, folks, as you're getting ready to go, what? Most of us haven't heard of Damanhur. And I'm trying to go, what, Damanhur? You know, I've heard of dominoes, okay, but no, that's a different game. This one, Damanhur, they play with people. And so what I want to find out from you, Keith, because you were there, what is this thing called the Federation of Damanhur? Where population? Tell us, please.
Okay. I'll give you the short version here of this. It's a community in northern Italy, north of Turin, on the border of Switzerland, France, and Italy. And it's called the Federation of Damanhur because, in a sense, it's its own entity, its own country. And they have their own language. They have their own currency, their own money. That is acknowledged in areas all around the world. They have their own economy, which is based now on about 50 different businesses. They have their own government, their own, basically their own everything. They're in a very rural area. They've got healing areas dedicated to different forms of healing. They've got a publishing department. They've got an eco-building area where they design and build eco-homes. Architects, doctors. It's its own entity. It's everything. And it was formed about 35 years ago, and it has increased in population. Now the population is in the neighborhood of 800 people live there, and they prosper. And it's art. It's based on art, spirituality, and intentional community building. They give classes there and that type of thing. They have their own universities and their own schools for younger people. So that's the short story.
Yeah. Now, certainly we want to know, I mean, because, okay, so here's this thing. It's an independent state, a federation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, well, it's in Italy. Apparently it's not subject totally to the Italian government.
And well, it is. It is. They pay Italian taxes.
Okay.
They haven't seceded from Italy, but they're as close to it as you can get. I mean, they have their own money, and somehow they've worked this out with Italy. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. But the community is there. What it's best known for, and it's, like you said, it's a secret. Not many people know about this place. There's a Damanhur in Egypt as well, and it means the city of light or the city of Horus. What is known for, if you look it up in Wikipedia or Google Damanhur, it'll talk about a temple complex that they built inside of a mountain. They went in and with picks and shovels about 30 years ago, started to dig inside of a mountain that they bought. And in it, they built a whole series of temples, about 150 feet underground. And the temples are completely adorned with murals and frescoes and stained glass work. Every inch of it is covered in art. And behind some of the art, underneath some of the art, sometimes is more art. The art is there not just to look beautiful, but it's a language and it's a story. The temple complex itself is about the size of a football field, to give you an idea. And when you're in, you can walk through the temples, and it's, they call it the temples of humankind, because it tells a story of humans' time on Earth, and actually up to today. And it does this in pictographs and murals, in their language, which is written all over the walls. So this is what they're known for primarily, is this temple complex. There's nothing else like it in the world. Unfortunately, on radio, I can't show you these images, these pictures of this beautiful place. It's something that you have to see. If you go to my website, dreamsofdamanhur.com, you can look at a lot of photographs that I've taken. Also on Google, there are photographs, and I get Wikipedia, or you can go to the Damanhur website itself, damanhur.org or .net, and you'll see pictures of the temples.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Because I know looking at some of this stuff, it's like just exquisitely beautiful. You think of Michelangelo and the work in the Sistine Chapel, and I mean, this stuff is, to me, every bit is beautiful, mm-hmm. and it's not just paintings. I mean, you have, what, intricate statues and stone and gem work. I mean, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, the stained glass work in there is some of the largest pieces ever assembled. And if you look at, again, my website, or if you see it in the film, you'll see some of these enormous Tiffany glass pieces that they use in the ceilings, and they're lit from behind. None of the light is natural light. It's all artificial because it's, of course, inside of a mountain. But these are all self-taught artists. None of the Damanhurians came with a background in art or architecture or certainly building or excavating or any of these things. They taught themselves when they realized what they needed to know.
Wow. Wow, that's mm-hmm. amazing. I mean, because folks, when we think about it, I mean, I can go out and I can mow my lawn and I can shovel some snow. I'm not capable of rebuilding my house and and a whole lot of other stuff. And here's some folks that gathered and dug out the side of a mountain and put in temples that are probably some of the most beautiful anywhere on the planet.
It's true, and you've got to keep in mind, too, this was basically 30 people initially. More people came later on, but it was a very small group of people. But what's amazing when you're there is you look at this temple complex and you go, okay, this is unbelievable that these people did this. But while they were doing that, they were also setting up their government and their businesses, their art projects. They were setting up their educational systems. They were inventing a new language. They were doing everything else that they needed to do to develop this federation.
Ah, okay.
So they had a lot of things going on.
They had their own language.
Their own language, yeah, and it's in many different forms. It's in three different written forms. One's kind of like, it's kind of like hieroglyphics, but it's slightly different. And then there's a numerical system of their language, and then there's another written form of the language. It's also danced, and it's I call it probably the newest language on the planet. They call it possibly the oldest language because it's taken from ancient wisdom, but it doesn't look like anything else I've ever seen.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then they have made their own money, so they have a self-sustaining economy?
They do. They're almost completely self-sustaining in energy, in their food needs. They have extensive farms, olives. They have their own olive oils and their own wine and all of their vegetables. They have actually, in their science labs, they've created beef without cloning. They have been working on this for a long time, and they're finally to the point now where they've actually got the masses of beef. Because a lot of them are meat eaters, and they don't want to kill cows. So their science people started working on this technology, very expensive technology, so they'd have their own beef. And like you say, they have their own businesses and their own money, which is tied to the euro. They are almost completely self-sufficient. They have a lot of different energy sources there, using algae for energy to create hydrogen. They have a lot of photovoltaics and geothermal. All of their houses are heated with geothermal energy. So they're as close to self-sufficient as you can get.
Yeah. Now, I loved seeing your movie. Folks, I mean, if you want something, here's this magical place, and then Keith has basically put together this wondrous movie of his experience, so you can have a tour guide to go there and preview this. And to me, this is exquisite to go to his website and actually check this out. And I invite you to get a copy of it, because you by yourself would be thrilled. And if you want to have the most unique film that you have ever shown your friends, Dreams of Dominhur is going to be just that film. Now, help me to understand, because you said something. I mean, we think, okay, well, they're there and they're growing some olives and they're very artistic. But the part about some of this science, you made mention they have a way of creating beef and some of the other. Could you share a bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, they have extensive science laboratories there. They both in traditional modern science and also in alchemy research. And these are very sophisticated laboratories. These aren't like little closets with a few beakers in it, because the work they do is extremely expensive. Some of the glassware and some of the devices that they need. They have patents on things like diagnostic testing with saliva. So instead of having your blood drawn to do certain medical testing now, you can do it just with a drop of saliva. They have the patents on that. They have the patents, about 50 different patents on a machine that allows humans to interact with plants. And one of the things I show in the movie is that one of the applications is this, making music with plants. For instance, in the movie, I play the guitar with a cyclamen plant. They do whole concerts with plants, sometimes just plants playing together, sometimes humans playing. I have an example in there of them playing with a flute player and a number of different plants playing on the stage. They have the patents for that. They are very big in science. And they're just constantly doing research. It's probably the most important thing the people do there. If you ask them what they're doing at the moment, they'll say research, because they look at everything as research. Developing new ways to live, developing communities, developing new scientific means is all research to them.
Yeah.
And so it keeps them very childlike, too, because they look at everything as doable.
Oh, isn't that great? Now, we may be able to get some of this music queued up and play a sample. I'm
great.
Not sure if we'll be able to do that. So so if Seth can help us and then chime in, we'd love to hear that. And of course, you have samples of that on your DVD.
Yeah, it's on the DVD, and it's also on my website. I've got some little clips of some plant music.
Okay.
And all the plant music's different.
Site again is dreamsofdominhur.com?
My website is dreamsofdominhur.com.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. You do?
Seth has spoken.
Encore!
Uh-huh. A short clip, but sweet.
Yes. Well, I'm sure people were imagining some plant in a tuxedo sitting down at a synthesizer.
Well, it's so mind-boggling. Like, I'm a musician, and I was there playing, and I've played music with the plants before, but you're there interacting with a plant, and just the fact that the plant can hear you, because they'll play along with you, they'll sometimes repeat notes that you've played in the same order, and you think, well, that's crazy, because plants don't have ears. I mean, how is this happening? You know, what's the device that they're using to do this? So then you get past that, and you go, well, no, they don't have ears, but they can feel vibration. Then you say, well, wait a minute. Okay, they're feeling the vibration, but they want to play with me. They want to play this little music game. What's that about? You know, what part of their personality wants to play music with me? And it's a real mind-boggling. Until you've experienced it, it's absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and they train plants too to become better players, in the sense that to make more beautiful harmonies. And some plants, I've listened to a chestnut tree that I really didn't like its music too much. I didn't like the sound of it too much. But they're all different, and I've been there, and we'll hook up one plant and play with that, and then we'll hook up another, and then we'll hook up a couple and let them play together. They do concerts. Well, I know they do them at the big botanical gardens in Florence in Italy, and they'll take them around to universities and do demonstration concerts with the plants.
Yeah. Now,
but this is just one of their inventions.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm curious, of course. Is this some specialized equipment? I mean, on one of the pictures that I'm looking at on the site, it shows a plant in a chair and then a synthesizer. And from your movie, I remember seeing that there were, like, electrodes hooked up to the plant in some fashion.
Exactly. The plant gets hooked up to the leaf and the root with these connectors. And then that goes to the machine that they invented. Then that is, in turn, connected to a synthesizer to produce the sound. And it has to do with the differential in electromagnetism in the plants between the leaf and the root. I can't really explain it better than that.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're hoping to have these available. I'm sorry?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's an old song that someone is singing, and they go, I talk to the trees, but the trees don't listen to me.
Yes,
and,
they do.
And now we're going, wait just a moment. We have an update.
Not only do they listen, but they want to play along.
Yeah.
But like I said, this is just one aspect of their science work. They are constantly developing new technologies.
And this beef thing, I'm trying to understand, are they like cloning cows? Or are they?
It's not cloning. It's not cloning, and they're the head of their science department. The best way she could explain it is it's closer to culturing beef cells, more like yogurt gets cultured than it is cloning.
Okay.
And it's taken on, like I said, many, many, many years. I've been there 5 times, and 2 years ago I went, and the beef cells was just a small mass of tissue. And that was big, to be able to have something they could even see. They've been telling me that it was working, but I couldn't see anything, so you just take their word for it. But now they have large masses of tissue, and it's truly beef cells. And their hope is to get it up to producing it so it's a high quality and a high flavor quality, and they can use it like you would any kind of meat.
Yeah. Well, my listeners may not know this, but if you look at some of the vegetarian websites, you would see documented information of an enormous economic cost on our planet for the production of beef, of meat.
Huge.
Yeah, and so, of course, there's the spiritual thing that says, well, we shouldn't eat those creatures, and then there's the economic thing that says, well, Jesus is costing us terribly, and with economic collapse imminent, isn't there a better way to spend money? And now here are they called Dominhurians?
Yes.
Okay, those good folks there, the Dominhurians, are coming up with a process where when they say, show me the beef, it's like, well...
Where's the beef?
Yeah, the beef?
Well, so no, most of them are Italians, and Italians eat beef. So they didn't want to stop eating beef. But they have an interesting thing there they do with farm animals. When there's a huge stone complex of stone circles out in a field, and when an animal, when they're considering slaughtering an animal for food, they take the animal out and put it in the center of this stone complex, and depending on which direction the animal walks out of the stones, he's either going to be eaten or he's going to be freed and taken care of for life. So if he walks one direction, he's dinner, and if he walks another direction, he's just going to live out his life in the hills of northern Italy.
Oh, wow. Do they give him a little training before he decides which way to go?
No, it's up to him. It's his big moment of decision in his life.
Yeah. Which way do I go?
Which way do I go?
Oh, okay. And behind door number one is the axe.
Yeah.
Behind door number two is lots of time out in the fields grazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's
pretty
amazing.
It's
a big decision for them.
Yeah, but...
But they have elaborate farms, and I've been to their olive groves, and I've been to, I think, all of their farms. And they have developed ways to use this plant technology to work in the greenhouses. For instance, the plants, because of this technology that they have, the plants can actually turn on the watering systems. They can turn on the vents. They can open doors in the greenhouses. So, in a sense, the plants are running the greenhouse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
they get
plants
to adjust
are hooked up.
Things. Huh. Well, this is fascinating because I don't know if you'd heard of Findhorn Gardens.
Sure.
and Dorothy McLean.
Mm-hmm.
Because she spoke of connecting to the devas or plant kind of overlord angels, if you will, and getting information where the plants would say, well, we'd like to be here, and we'd like to be next to this plant, we'd like this much water and this much sun. And it was like, okay, that's a lot of great download of information.
Yeah, and then Peter Caddy would go out and dig the holes and kind of facilitate it.
Yeah.
In Findhorn.
So here we're seeing this taken to another level of where the plants, if I'm understanding, are actually able to operate some equipment.
Oh, yeah.
That adjust their environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have, like I say, they have over 50 different patents on this one machine alone to allow it to do a lot of different kinds of applications. So there's probably, you know, it's just limited by the imagination where this one's going to go.
Yeah.
And Findhorn, you mentioned Findhorn. Findhorn is probably the only other community I know of in the world of this size, although Dominhur is much larger than Findhorn, that has carried on a successful, intentional community for as long as it has. I went to Europe looking for communities. Specifically art communities, when I went to Dominhur, and I realized that hardly any of them have survived. There were a lot in the 60s that started, many in the 70s, and then they just kind of withered away, and for one reason or another. And I had a very hard time finding any. And that's when I heard of Dahmenhor, because it's been thriving for 35 years.
Yeah. Well, here it is. It's been around. I'm wondering why they're so unknown and seem to be in some ways kind of secretive. For instance, if you describe the entrance to the temples as an obscure door, isn't it? A very simplistic looking door.
Okay. Right.
Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, and it's a good question. This is all by design. They wanted to do their work, and they didn't really want a lot of interference. And at first, they just went about it. They weren't looking for really any press to speak of at all. They wanted to get themselves established, get their economic base strong. They wanted to figure out what they were doing, really, and solidify their government. Plus, they were building this complex of temples inside of a mountain that's completely illegal in Italy. Italy, like the United States, you need building permits, and they were doing this without any kind of permits. So they wanted to do this to a certain degree of privacy and secrecy. They wanted to build the temples. Also, spiritually, they are a mystery school, which just simply means that you can come there and study things, different areas of spirituality in their community. But you go through a process. You're not given all of the keys at once. It takes years. And I asked Falco about that once. Why it was? I'll explain who Falco is in a minute. But he was the visionary who started the community. But he said that it's like if somebody wants to fly and comes to you and asks for the key to a jetliner, you don't give them the key to the jetliner. You know, it takes years to learn how to fly. And just because the desire is there doesn't mean that you give a person access. So a lot of their teachings are, you know, kind of mysterious and secretive. And they wanted it that way. When I landed at Dahmenhor, they decided that they wanted a documentary and that it was time for them to come out to the world. Since then, they're known in a bigger way than they ever have been before. They have connected with the United Nations. They've been getting a lot of awards from UNESCO and United Nations Gen organization for community building, for everything, for community building, for house designs, eco-house designs, for their currency. It got awards as the most beautiful coins being minted. So they are now, they feel it's time to come out, that they're ready.
Mm. Wow, okay.
Yeah, so that's a little bit about that.
Well, you know, that to me, that's so wise. I've heard from different of my teachers over the years that we have a metaphor in the process of a family that gives birth to a new child. That generally, when the new child is born, they're kept with mom and dad and nurtured in that very cloistered setting for a period of time.
Yeah.
Before they're taken out and shown off.
Right, right. Well, I think, yeah, there's certainly that element to this. Also, you know, if you have a lot of visitors, you have to devote time to your visitors, and they have so many projects going on that they didn't want to get sidetracked.
And they are very careful.
I'm sorry?
Oh, well, you know what? What was interesting is you were saying that I was imagining myself as my listeners could be imagining how, you know, surprise phone calls, a company drops over, a neighbor stops by, family drops in unexpected, whatever, and so to me, when I was imagining that, as you were saying, you know, it can take up a lot of time, and so I just thought to myself, Well, maybe they can create some sort of a, oh, there's got to be a good term for this. It's like a proactive tourism ritual, might be a word for it, and and that means that if you're going to come and visit Damanhur, for every hour that you visit, you contribute an hour of work to something that needs to happen in the camp or in the village.
They have that. They are set up for visitors now. They have a work exchange program, and because their university's there, they have a lot of people coming and taking part in their classes and workshops and all of that. So they are set up. They're actually thinking about building a hotel of sorts up there, too, because they just don't have, up till now, haven't had enough room to house all the visitors that are coming. But another thing that was important to them when they built the community was to keep the size of the community manageable. And they don't really want more citizens. They have about 800 now. And their feeling is that once the community gets too large, you lose connection. People lose connection with each other. And they want to keep it at the right, you know, the right population so that everyone knows everyone else. And I think that, too, it was extremely wise of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So do they do anything with the population control? I'm figuring they've got some married couples or...
Oh, yeah. No, they're not worried about children. They just don't want to have more citizens coming, because you can go through the process of becoming a citizen there. It takes a few years, and... But I don't think they want to get... People come and people go, and I think they like that. But they don't really want to get much larger in terms of population.
Okay.
I think they're where they want to be.
Well, it's exciting just to see what they're doing and that they have so many things coming together. You said a number of patents and a lot of scientific research. And so... It seems like they've got their hands full just carrying on with what they're doing, let alone try to expand the community.
Well, they do. They're incredibly work-oriented. They exhaust me just to watch them. They are up early in the morning, and they're up late at night working. They have apparently no desire for vacations or breaks. And when I ask them about that, they just say, well, why would we want to take a break? We're doing what we want to be doing. You know, why would we want a vacation? Where could we go that's better than Damanhur?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, they've got everything they want there, and they're involved in this work. It's hard to imagine them, you know, resting. Aside from, you know, the communal meals they'll eat, it's kind of like being on a campus. I kind of think of what a Microsoft campus must be like, where you've got these really incredibly intelligent, focused people that are going around and doing the work that they think is the most important work in the world, and they don't have time for much else. That's what you see at Damanhur.
Now, I'm curious, because you've been there, you said, five times, and I'm wondering, just to, because I've experienced a range of things. I've been to, for instance, Jack Canfield, a dear friend. He's done some workshops, the seven-day-long Breakthrough to Success workshop. And by the third day into it, we would be starting the morning of the workshop with some nice music, and we'd get up and maybe stretch and move around a little, and then we would take about a 15-minute period with nice music playing and just go around kind of randomly to different people and share wonderful hugs with each other. And oh boy, did that ever set a tone for a day of feeling good.
Right.
And it makes me curious, what's the general tone of the energy with the people there in Damanhur?
Well, they're extremely friendly. And I said before, extremely bright and super focused. But they, and it comes back to the time, the visiting time, they are focused and they have to be very careful about their time. So there's not a lot of time for socializing if you go there. You're like, if for instance, if you go as part of a workshop, your time is pretty scheduled, and they've got it worked out. I mean, you certainly have free time, but it's not a kind of situation where it's free time and you go and you just hang out at their houses and, you know, watch TV or something. You've got free time to do what you need to do, but they're off doing their work. I mean, if you imagine people that are working 18 hours a day every day, they don't have a lot of time for hanging out.
But they are super friendly people, super warm.
I mean, it's a very familial type of group. They're very warm and wonderful and helpful. I've never met a grumpy Dominorian.
Okay. Okay, well, this is good to know. And I don't know, I mean, Italians as a culture, when we think about them, they tend to be some of the most passionate and some of the most affectionate of many of the cultures compared to, for instance, the Germans.
Sure.
One example of very scientific people, and they have fun, but not tends to be as affectionate and
sure.
And playful as some of the Italians. Now, you said these are, and a lot of people, you know, from Italy mostly, and I'm just wondering how much of that playfulness and affection you were seeing.
Well, I grew up in an Italian family, coincidentally, just very few miles from where Domino is. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, that's very strange. But what you're talking about that is alive and well, I mean, in terms of an affectionate, demonstrative sort of family, it's very much that. I mean, it's kind of the old slipper feel. You know, it's very easy to slip into it. And the people are so genuine, too. They're not guarded, and they're not hidden, and they're not hiding things. And they're also, and this is an important thing to keep in mind, they're also not prophesizing. They will never try to convince you of anything in terms of their belief system. Their belief system, it'll never come up unless you ask questions. They'll never offer their views on things. They don't want to change your way of looking at things. That's not in mm-hmm. their... they don't have a book. There's no dogma. They don't have a book of Dominorian rights and wrongs. As a matter of fact, the only rule in Dominhor is no smoking on their properties and no illegal anything because they don't want to get in trouble with the authorities. And there are authorities, particularly in the Catholic Church, that would love to see Dominhor go away because they're not Catholic, basically. But other than that, you know, there's no dogma to Dominhor. There's no religion. They don't have a religion. They honor all religions. In their temples, they have an area called a labyrinth. And when you go through the labyrinth, there's these beautiful stained glass pieces. And each stained glass piece in there represents a deity or a god. So you might see Buddha and Christ and Ganesh and, you know, the list goes on. And their idea is, with time, because they're always increasing the number of these, to have all of the deities and gods represented there. Because I think they believe that they all had something to say, and basically the wisdom of the ancients, the real fundamental message is always the same. It's be good to your neighbor, don't steal, don't kill, don't say bad things. You know, the precepts, the basic precepts are always the same in religions. But I believe, they believe, that these are deities and they should be respected, but they're not gods. There's only one God. And that is a deep subject that we'll have to get to some other day.
Sure.
But they honor all of them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I'm curious, because, you know, they have these industries, so they make cheese and they make wine. And
oh, yeah.
Do they have regular celebrations?
Oh, there's a lot of rituals and celebrations there. The one that I would absolutely encourage anybody that's thinking about going there to go to is a ceremony they have in the full moon every month, and it's called the Night of the Dead. And it's an outdoor ceremony ritual that they do in one of their, it's called the Open Temple, and it's a huge series of columns, and it's kind of like a temple above ground. And the Night of the Oracle, it's not the Night of the Dead, it's the Night of the Oracle, and it's an amazing visual feast of men on these big horses with torches, lit torches, and drummers drumming, and choirs singing, They ask questions of the oracle that night, and the answers come, and you're free to ask questions of the oracle, and about your life, or about, you know, really whatever you want to ask, and they try to get answers, and it's an incredible ceremony to watch.
Okay.
So yes, there are, some of them are open to the public, some of them aren't. The Night of the Oracle is open. So, to anybody that wants to be there.
Oh, all right. Now, I want to also make sure, again, that folks get to hear the website where they can joyfully purchase your DVD, Dreams of Damanhur.
Yeah, the website is just www.dreams, D-R-E-A-M-S, of, O-F, Damanhur. Damanhur. No, I'm sorry. I'm not spelling that right.
Well, that's okay. It makes it more fun for people to find the website.
Damanhur. So it's just Dreams of Damanhur. And you can Google it, or you can Google me. My last name is Busha, Keith Busha, and it'll get you there. Or you can go to Damanhur's website, and that there's things there about the movie, too.
Sure.
And
okay.
I should tell you that we're having the U.S. premiere of the movie in about 2 weeks in California. If anybody's in the Stockton, Sacramento area, it's going to be in Lodi, and it's going to be a piece. They requested that we do a showing down there. It's the first piece, first film for the Lodi International Film Festival.
On
January 21st. So I'll be there, and some other people.
Have the new California governor there, or at least some representative of his.
Yeah, there's going to be. It's a red carpet deal there. Making quite a big deal of this affair on the 21st, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because Governor Jerry Brown's a bit of an old, kind of a very personable man with the leanings towards community, and here's Damanhur, a community that it's kind of interesting, because in the 60s, the hippies were make love, not war, and peace, love, dope, and this kind of stuff.
Right.
A lot of marijuana. They had great fun, but they weren't able, and a lot of affection, but they weren't able to sustain anything in the way of businesses and long-term communities.
Well, I think one of the problems was that who were part of that weren't ready. One, we weren't that focused, and two, we weren't really that ready to sacrifice. And it takes tremendous sacrifice to get things accomplished. And if you're unfocused, you can have all the great ideas in the world, but the chances are they're not going to get done. Dominor was so smart, the way they went about it, really thought it through, and they realized that if they didn't have an economic base, if they didn't have a way to fund all these things they wanted to do, they wouldn't happen. So that's where they started, was how do we set up a financial base? Then it was how do we set up a government that can run this organization, whatever you want to call it, this federation. And they were just really intelligent about how they designed it. So,
that's
that's a good idea. I think we should get a hold of Jerry Brown and see if he would like to come to this, because it's right up his alley.
Yeah, you could tell him it's a hippie's dream come true.
Yeah. But it's not a utopia. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people hear about Dominor and they think, this is great, I'll go there, and, I can just see it now. I'll be up in the Alps, and beautiful weather, and beautiful, friendly people, and delicious food, and fresh vegetables. But it's not really that way. It's an engine. It's a little engine that's working hard. And like I say, the people there just don't have time for laying in the hammocks. It's
okay.
Emotion.
Well, that's one thing that it is a curiosity for me about that. An 18-hour workday. But I know anyone that's been involved in a project where they are absolutely engaged because it's fulfilling to them. We all know that you can just do that and you're not tired, you're not drained, you just feel engaged and excited.
You're nurtured by it.
Yeah.
You're actually, the energy is coming back to you tenfold. It's amazing to watch, and we've all had those moments, like you're saying, where you're involved in something you love and you just, the time just zips by and you go, wait a minute, I don't want to stop. I mean, I know I've got to sleep, but I don't want to stop. I want to keep doing it. And they're like that every day. And this, you feel this, Kenneth, too. When you're there, you only have to be there, minutes before you feel this energy, this juice that's around this place. It's just immediately, it's visceral. Right away, you go, God, I don't know what's going on here, but something's going on.
and there's lots of signs of productivity.
Right.
And I don't know if they're like, if you see them out to playing soccer or going for runs or bicycle rides, because it sounds like they're engaged in many activities, but do they take time for just regular exercise or meditation, any of that?
Well, meditation to them, the answer is basically no. Meditation to them is working. They have a school of meditation, but meditation to them is doing the work that you feel you should be doing, finding your place in the mechanism and doing it. It's not restful necessarily, because productivity is very big with them. They feel I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
Oh, and I wanted to check now for sleep. They don't like hang upside down from the ceiling out
maybe.
By the feet, do they?
Maybe. I've never seen them sleep, so I don't know. It's hard to imagine a Dominarian sleeping. It really is. I've never seen it happen.
Maybe for your next movie.
And this is particularly true of the visionary man who started the whole... he had envisioned Dominor when he was 13 years old. He is more productive than even the rest of them. He's produced something like 14,000 oil paintings in his life. He's a very prolific painter, actually that's where a lot of money comes from, is his paintings are sold before they're finished, before the paint's dry.
Sure. Oh, I love it. Wow.
And
Keith, I'm just looking. We've We've used up all of our time today.
Oh, no.
We're just getting started. I know.
Oh, no.
We will have to invite you back and go into more depth on this, if you'd be willing.
I'd love to, Ken.
Okay, well, we'll follow up on some scheduling, and I'll show more people your movie, and just want to thank you, Keith, for taking time to be with us today and build so much enthusiasm for this wonderful place and your beautiful work.
Thank you, and I hope you can come someday to Turin.
Yeah, I plan on it. I definitely
Good.
Do.
Good.
All right. Well, and until we meet again, Keith, many blessings to you, my beloved listeners, many blessings to you, and calling forth the goodness of the universe. And God bless all of us, and goodbye for now. Let go.